Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Another day, another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We're going to start doing this the more shows we do, opening up our phone lines at the beginning of the show. If you want to call in, speak your mind on anything, any local sport, anything out in the NFL, MLB, NBA, whatever you want, we're going to leave the phone lines open. So here's the phone number on that, 913-491-8255. Again, that's 913-491-8255. On yesterday's show, we didn't really get the full opportunity to talk about the big breaking news of yesterday. And that was two promotions in the Royals front office. Dayton Moore, the acting general manager, was promoted to president of the club. And J.J. Bacola, who was the assistant general manager, now the acting general manager in Kansas City. After the news broke, a lot of people, I'm sure, were wondering what is expected of this change in the front office? How much different is J.J. Bacola from Dayton Moore? Being the assistant general manager, working with Dayton Moore, you have to think that they were similar on some levels. If they weren't, not so sure that he would have gotten that promotion. Would have been butting heads a lot, not agreeing on a lot of things. J.J. Bacola, though, is a key reason, one of the biggest reasons the Royals farm system is in the state that it's in at the moment. A lot of great player development happened over this last offseason, especially with the hitting. You had guys last season, or 2019 for that matter, Nick Prado, MJ Melendez, struggling in High A in Wilmington at the time. Now they're both hitting and hitting for power, getting on base in AAA Omaha. Bobby Witt Jr. is tearing it up in AAA. Vinny Pasquantino, a late round pick out of Old Dominion a few years back, doing the same thing in AA. And you're starting to see a lot of these prospects flourish like top prospects do. J.J. Bacola, again, a key reason in that. Not to say that Dayton Moore didn't have anything. That Dayton Moore did draft these guys. Bacola, though, did a lot of the scouting. He scouted Kyle Isbell, as me and Marco were talking about before the show today. He scouted a lot of guys you've seen not at the major league level. He came over like Dayton Moore from Atlanta. And now taking over a role in a city that is longing for its baseball club to get back to that 2014 and 15 level. If I had to pinpoint where this current team is in comparison to the 2014 and 15 teams, I would say this team is closer to 2011-2012, likely a year or two away from getting that winning record, I think. Piecing together those guys. Right now they're still developing that starting rotation, still getting some consistent hitters in the lineup. You do have some foundation pieces. You got Salvador Perez, Nicky Lopez now one of those guys. Maybe Andrew Benintendi stays a little bit longer. Whit Merrifield, the same thing. They're still going through those growing pains, though. And J.J. Bacola, this is the right time to hand over the reins to J.J. Bacola to take this team to the next level. However, looking on social media yesterday, it does appear that Dayton Moore is not going to be completely out of the picture in terms of baseball moves, baseball transactions. He will get the final say and the tiebreaker decision when it comes down to My guess would be promoting a player, extending a guy, signing a guy in free agency. He will still have a voice in that front office. The thing is, though, you don't promote a guy to a general manager spot and not give him 80, 90% of the decisions. JJ Piccolo is a well-respected man in baseball. He did have opportunities to become a general manager elsewhere. Now the Royals have him as their general manager. He's not some inexperienced guy that is in way over his head. He's more than capable of getting this team back to the postseason. The part that people can get hung up on, and a part that can be concerning, is just how much control will Dayton Moore have? Dayton Moore has made some good moves, some great moves for that matter, over his time being general manager in Kansas City. He's also made a lot of questionable moves, a lot of moves that eventually hurt the ball club. He's a great people person. He does care about his players. He takes care of his players. Sometimes, though, that judgment can get in the way of a baseball move. At the time, I mean, you look back at some contract extensions. You had Alex Gordon, a fan favorite, a Royals Hall of Famer, a guy that is known all over the Midwest area. He's always been that guy that resembled being a Royal. The contract extension, though, in the end, eventually hurt Kansas City. Because as things go in baseball, he just didn't perform. He didn't perform to the contract's expectations. Danny Duffy, another guy that got a long-term deal, lives and breathes being a Royal, said, "Bury me a Royal." Was a guy that truly embodied that blue-collar work ethic, really was loved by the fans through the good and the bad seasons, had good stuff, got that extension, you know, some off-field troubles, bounced around on the injured list, never truly lived up to that contract's expectation. Now you look at this current roster, Hunter Dozier, even though his contract isn't ludicrous by any means, it's not going to completely damage the roster construction. That's another move, though, of maybe banking on a guy that's only put in one good season at the major league level, a late bloomer. And it's not out of the question for Hunter Dozier to turn things around and produce in the last 3 years of his contract. It's just those moves that the Royals need to start avoiding. You can have a ton of respect for a player and also know when it's time to extend them and also let them go. It's often a reason why the Royals are so quiet at the deadline. Whit Merrifield has had the chance to play for a contender the last 3 years easily and would have gotten a decent return. The asking price in Kansas City has always been astronomically high. You hope with J.J. Piccolo taking over as general manager, the tough decisions are made when they need to be made. You have to know sometimes when you're not in contention and you can get value for guys and slowly build that farm system, keep that farm system strong. Of course, you have to draft well. They've done that pretty well the last couple of years. You can't get in this rut, though, of not making the tough decisions because your heart gets in the way. And that has happened quite a few times under Dayton Moore. That's not always, it's not a bad character trait. It shows that he cares. He doesn't want to leave these guys out in the cold. If he feels like they can give the Royals a chance to win, he'll give them that opportunity. The Royals know that they know that they're on the cusp of getting back to that postseason baseball. They're inching closer. They're starting to build from their farm system, which was always the plan. And now this move gives them a better shot. You'll still have Dayton Moore's voice, but it's a newer top voice in the front office in J.J. Piccolo. I can't predict what it's going to look like this offseason with the next draft class, who's the next player to get extended. It's all going to be speculation up until that point, when the first big move J.J. Piccolo makes. But it is an exciting time in Kansas City, a breath of fresh air, and they did not fire Dayton Moore. It wasn't any sort of animosity there. They just promoted him to president of the club, and J.J. Piccolo earned that promotion and should be some exciting things for the Royals in the future. When we come back here on The Shift, we're going to switch into some Chiefs football, talking about that number two wide receiver spot and a matchup that you are most looking forward to in the coming weeks of the regular season. You've listened to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. There were a lot of issues on Sunday afternoon against the Cleveland Browns. The defense was the glaring issue. A lot of problems there, but also missing some key guys on that defense. The one that slipped under the radar a little bit, that didn't get talked about enough because the Chiefs eventually won. It doesn't get put into the spotlight unless they lose. And that was the number two wide receiver spot in that offense. Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, and Byron Pringle were all pretty much a non-factor in that Sunday win against Cleveland. Now, it's week one. There's jitters. Got to knock the rust off a little bit. But I asked this question. In a season like this, how long is the leash with those guys? We talked about it a little bit on yesterday's show. I also talked about it multiple times on the show. Are the Chiefs going to trust those guys as their number two wide receiver because Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill are going to be those number one and two pass catchers? When you're playing on the road in prime time, though, in a big-time game, maybe against the Raiders, maybe it's the Ravens this Sunday, you got Buffalo on Sunday Night Football, one of those big games, what happens when maybe one of those guys is not as effective as they were on Sunday? You have to be able to trust either Hardman, Robinson, or Pringle. Not one of them in that game on Sunday truly showed their ability to take a grasp of that spot. So back to that question. How long is that leash? Do the Chiefs stick it out and keep those guys and trust they're going to be those guys the entire season? Or does it reach a point where they have to go bring in a guy? Maybe it's a John Brown who was with Buffalo last couple years. He's only 2 years removed from a 1,000-yard season. Earlier today, or maybe it looked like it was last night, Josh Gordon, according to Adam Schefter, successfully completed his NFL monitor treatment program and has recommended to the NFL that he be reinstated. Gordon is awaiting final approval from the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell, but he is said to be ready to play and vaccinated. We all know the baggage Josh Gordon carries with him. He's still a great player. So there's two guys, and there's a handful of guys you could turn to. Maybe it's somebody they elevate from the practice squad. Cornell Powell is still down there. depends how much they can trust him. Marco, I'm curious of your thoughts on this. And it's interesting to talk about this point because it's a big point in this offense. I'm trying to think of the word there. Do you think they can roll with those guys as their number two, or do you think that they'll look elsewhere as we get later into the season?
It depends on, you know, I think this Ravens game and the Chargers game are going to be big looks at whether or not, or it's going to give you a telling at least of what you can do or what your wide receiver core is going to look like for the future of the season. I don't know if you can go or if you can target, 80, 90% of Mahomes' passes to Kelce and Hill. Someone's going to have to step up either this week or next week. I've always said that I get that people are concerned wide receiver too. I always said Hill and Kelce, they kind of are the wide receiver ones and twos of this Chiefs defense, but, or offense, excuse me. But I understand where people are coming from. You got to have another target after them. And you would like to think it's Hilaire, but it's far as someone, he lines up in the backfield, he's your running back. I don't know if you'd want your running back as your third best pass catcher on this team. That's why I'm hoping Hardman really steps up in this Ravens game and hopefully in the Chargers game next 2 weeks. But I like the idea of bringing in John Brown from the free agency. I know his name has been the main one that's been put out there for Chiefs to look at when talking about free agents. It's too early right now for me to really say. I think we've seen what we're going to get out of DeMarcus Robinson, though. I think that he is going to be your 500 yards a season, maybe 400 yards a season with 4 or 5 touchdowns. But that it's really up to McColl now to step up. And he was nowhere to be found in that Chiefs game. And I don't know if it was because of game plan of the Browns or if he just wasn't getting open on his routes. It's one of those things where if we get to the halfway point, week 8, and he's not had a 60-yard game, 70-yard game, we're kind of seeing the same of him that we saw in week 1, then I think it gets to the point where you got to possibly seek out, not a trade, I don't think Brett Beach would give up, unless he's receiving a pick in return for a wide receiver. I think at that point you start looking for someone on that free agency. And John Brown's a perfect fit, I feel like. He's someone that has been through multiple NFL offenses, multiple systems. He's served well as a wide receiver too in Buffalo. I don't think it's far stretched to go out and go and get another option. I'm not saying the Chiefs have a big problem right now, or as far as their offense is going to just be bad without a third pass catcher or a third option on the team, but it's just nice to have that, you know, arsenal of weapons. That's why you drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round, because it's nice to add another weapon to this offense. And so if you can find someone like that in Brown, I got to take a look at whether receivers are on the market. But if he's at the top of it, you got to be at least intrigued by it. I mean, this is a team that went out and got Le'Veon Bell last year in the off waivers, because why not? Why not add someone like Bell to your running back room?
And I do. I'm curious when you get up to that point of who you find who's available in free agency list. I'd love to talk a little bit more about those options. The only reason I bring this up, and of course, it's so early. We've only played one game. You can't judge how they're going to be just after one game. The thing is, though, and why I bring up this question, how much do you think they're going to change? The only guy that truly, I think, has that shot of surprising you is Hardman. We haven't gotten the chance to truly see Hardman. As you pointed out, we know what we're going to get from DeMarcus Robinson. I also think we know what we're going to get from Byron Pringle. Hardman, though, is a little bit of a wild card in this offense. And the Chiefs have gone out before and added, even when it wasn't really a position of need. The last two seasons, they brought in, you could argue, some of the top running backs of the 2010s. You had LeSean McCoy the Super Bowl season, Le'Veon Bell last season. The other problem to that, though, let's say you bring in John Brown. All right, you bring in John Brown week 8, week 9. He has not been playing in regular season games, and you're now expecting him to be that number 2 guy in your offense, or number 3 guy behind Hill and Kelsey. Is that a better producer than having Hardman, Robinson, and Pringle? It's really going to come down to if... I just don't know if Hardman's going to get targeted enough. We saw on Sunday, he should have been able to get open with Hill and Kelsey being the focal point from Cleveland's defense.
Right.
He should have been able to get 5 to 6 catches. And I think he only had 1 or 2. DeMarcus Robinson, I don't know if you saw this too with DeMarcus Robinson. I'd seen it kind of on social media a little bit. Did it look like Patrick Mahomes is a little bit frustrated with DeMarcus Robinson? And we all know, and I think kind of the knock on DeMarcus Robinson, he never runs forward. It's always backwards.
Yeah.
You know, he'll get 2 yards from the first down, and then he'll try to make it turn into a 15-yard gain. And then there was that one play, I want to say his third quarter. It was after that fumble.
Right.
Nick Chubb's fumble. And should have been, it was a tough play.
Well, he needed, I think he was wanting to do what Tyreek Hill did on his 75-yard touchdown. Just come back to the football.
Exactly. It was a corner route in the end zone. Had, I want to say,
it was one-on-one
Cleveland
coverage.
Second. Somebody, I can't remember who was on Robinson, but he had slipped or something. And Robinson just had to come back, come meet the ball. That's what Mahomes was saying. He was saying, come back to the ball. That's an easy touchdown. And Robinson ended up diving, being about 3 yards short of it. I just don't know. Man, I just don't know if I could see any three of those guys really showing anything different than what we've seen in their careers. Is that good enough to get them, the Chiefs, back to the Super Bowl is the main question. Mecole Hardman is explosive. Nobody can deny that. DeMarcus Robinson would pretty much be a 3 or 4 on any other NFL team. Byron Pringle, same thing. The Chiefs are different, though. They pride themselves on having those weapons. And it was a gamble this offseason for Brett Veach to say, Mecole Hardman / Robinson / Pringle, you guys are going to compete for our number 2 spot. They didn't re-sign Sammy Watkins. We saw what Watkins did on Monday night against the Raiders with the Ravens. They, I guess, would have had an opportunity to go get John Brown.
Well, you know, it's no secret that the Chiefs were wanting to add another receiver to this room because they went out and tried to get Juju Smith-Schuster and they weren't able to get him. He re-signed with Pittsburgh, so it's. I understand why people are having the conversation, not only because of the play on the field, obviously, Mecole Hardman only getting 3 receptions for 19 yards. But Chiefs were trying to make some moves this offseason, and they did draft a wide receiver in the draft, and that ended up not working out as they thought it would. But it's no secret that they need to add another receiver into this room. And I don't know who's going to step up. I don't know if it's going to be Pringle. Are we going to see more Matt Kemp, Darius Fountain maybe get some – are they going to be ready for an NFL regular season game? I just know that Kemp's been a training camp guy, has shined in the preseason. Darius Fountain, the most recent shining through the preseason. Who's going to take the snaps away from Hardman and Robinson? And I think those two guys, what they do wrong is just the little things. Like you mentioned with Robinson going back, running backwards and not forwards, holding on the football with one hand, messing up on not having that right chemistry with Mahomes to know to come back to the football. He's going to underthrow it on purpose so that you can beat your cornerback to the football. Hardman, I think it's the same thing. Route running is a problem. I think he's going in spots where he's not supposed to on certain plays. It's just, I think that he's getting the short routes where he has to make a play afterwards to blow it up. I don't know. Have we ever seen just a Mecole Hardman 20-yard, 30-yard catch? I feel like we've only seen short receptions by him or touchdown receptions where he just, blows away from the secondary because he's just that fast and explosive. It's just, I'm waiting to see for someone other than Hill and Kelce to step up. Obviously, and it's, I just don't know how long you wait. What's the deadline? What's the cutoff time? How many more weeks are you going to give these? Are you going to give the two receivers these chances?
And I think you, it's the right point. We have not seen a lot of Mecole Hardman's big plays in his NFL career have been that busted coverage or just using his speed to break away from guys. You want to see that Tyreek Hill style of route running. You know, it's 3rd and 7. You need a big play. Do an 11-yard route and get us that first down. Now, Tyreek Hill is in a league of his own. Mecole Hardman just needs to be half that, though, to get to where the Chiefs need him to be. I want to come out and point it again. It's still very early. There's going to be an opportunity this season for it to be the Mecole Hardman game or the DeMarcus Robinson game or the Byron Pringle game. They'll get that chance to step up. It's just a matter if they take it. Keeping on the topic of the Chiefs, and Marco, I'm a little bit back and forth here on a topic of what is your most anticipated game in the coming weeks? I'll open it up to you to start this.
I was for the Chiefs or just NFL Week 2 in general?
The Chiefs.
Well, going back quickly to Hardman, I looked up really quick. Last year, he only had 4 games where it was 50 or more reception yards last year. But for the Chiefs this year, most anticipated games, I mean, I think that the Chargers Week 3, obviously, that gives you an idea. I mean, I have an idea of that's going to be your toughest team in the division this year. So I want to get an idea of what that will look like versus L.A. I think the Washington game is a little enticing just because of how good their defense is. How can the Chiefs do against a really good NFL defense? Because who's the other top team in the NFL right now? It's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they have a darn good defense. But what's scarier about them, too, is though they have a really good offense, though, and better, way better offense than Washington. So I want to see how the Chiefs' offense matches up against a top-5 NFL defense. Kind of got a sneak peek of that this last week with Cleveland, though, but that's a little more – that's an October game, so it's a more middle of the season. Depending on what the Packers look like by November, that game obviously as well. Bills and Titans, got to see some more. It's just like the Packers. Got to see some more out of them later on the season. Could have just been week one stuff for those two offenses. Expect a little bit more of a challenge in those games, but – really, that middle of the season is where those, because like the end of the season they play in the month of December, they play the Broncos twice, the Raiders once. Depending on where Chiefs Chargers are at in the division wise, how well the Chargers are doing that December 16th game. It's a Thursday night game in LA at SoFi. Curious to see maybe that's a division game that we're all looking at where the Chiefs have to win it to remain a 2-game lead over the Chargers. It's Steelers one more last test defensively for the team, but there's a lot of good games on the Chiefs schedule this year where they're going to get challenged, and I'm curious to see how they face it, because once again, everyone's expecting Chiefs Buccaneers in the Super Bowl this year, and that's a really good offense, and that's a really good offense matched with a really good defense, and also the return to all their Super Bowl starters from last year. So I think that Washington game is a sneaky one to circle. It's on the road in Washington. Like I said, really good defense. It's going to be a really good test for the offense. But that and the Chargers Week 3 may be the closest games before the bye week. They have a late bye week this year. Those are the ones that I will be intrigued about. What about you?
The one I have marked down on my list, and I have it for a little bit of a different reason, is that Bills Sunday night game at Arrowhead. It'll be a big game for the Chiefs. I think it is a monumental game for Buffalo. The reason why is that Josh Allen last season goes 0-2 against Kansas City. He's 0-2 in his career against Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
You lose that game again, and I know it's a very... there's nothing like primetime football at Arrowhead Stadium. That is a big statement game for Josh Allen in Buffalo. They, of course, just lost at home in their opener against Pittsburgh. We might be in the middle of a, I think it's week five. I want to say it's week five, Bills at the Chiefs early in the season. In all likelihood, the teams are going to be different by the time the end of the season comes around. The Bills, though, and Josh Allen need this game so badly. So badly. Same thing with this Sunday night with the Ravens and Lamar. Lamar Jackson has to find a way to beat Patrick Mahomes. He loses on Sunday, he's 0-4. Josh Allen loses in week 5, he's 0-3. The quote-unquote young upcoming quarterbacks would all be winless against Patrick Mahomes. And it's that rematch of the AFC Championship game. Still, many people consider Buffalo to be a Super Bowl favorite. I don't think week 1 losses change any of that. This truly shows the gap, though, between Kansas City and Buffalo. If the Chiefs come in and just mop the floor with the Bills again, as they did in the AFC Championship game, and that game in Buffalo last season was a lot closer than it needed to be. I think the Chiefs had their highest rushing mark of the season. Clyde Edwards-Helaire just was able to take advantage of a rainy game in that offensive line. The Bills have not truly played the Chiefs super well in those two chances. This is number 3. You get beat down at Arrowhead, and it's a tough place to play, as we just mentioned. It's no shame in losing at Arrowhead Stadium, especially on Sunday Night Football. You're the Bills, though. You're wanting to get that credit to be that Super Bowl contender. Super Bowl contenders don't get pushed around against other playoff teams. They find a way to win those big games. And that matchup, though early on, will continue to just show what's the gap like between not only Buffalo and Kansas City, between Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to ask you this question, Marco, and it's after this week one game between Buffalo and Pittsburgh. Is that a game at home you could see Patrick Mahomes losing? Home opener, and I know they just lost to Cleveland. I think Cleveland's a much different team than Pittsburgh. I'm talking Pittsburgh now. They have Ben Roethlisberger as their quarterback, has probably the least amount of yards per attempt per throw. Is that a game Patrick Mahomes loses when you played at Arrowhead Stadium against Pittsburgh week one?
No. No, it's not.
And it's Buffalo did have some things go wrong. Block punt set the tone of the game. That was pretty much it.
Right.
That's still, though, I'm not trying to be biased. I don't see Patrick Mahomes putting the Chiefs in that type of situation. The Bills had 16 points. You can count on one hand how many times that's happened to Patrick Mahomes. They've scored less than 20 points. I mean, the Chiefs' offense typically always puts the defense in a position to win the game. They give them enough points to say, hey, go out there and shut it down for us. And the Steelers are not an explosive offense. They have a great defense. That offense is going to struggle to put up points. And they did. They had one true touchdown. And it was a ball that was nearly intercepted. So Buffalo loses that game. And Josh Allen has been praised a lot, especially last season. I know we talked about it on one of the previous shows. Remember that AFC Championship game, that ESPN breakdown?
Mm-hmm.
And they gave the edge at quarterback to Buffalo?
Yeah.
Well, let's see it then. Let's see this edge that Buffalo has. Week 5 at Arrowhead Stadium, that's your chance. That is your chance to come in to is going to be a rocking environment. That game in the AFC Championship game, that was a chippy game too. There's going to be a little bit of bad blood, I think, between both teams. The Ravens, and I'd like to point out, I say Ravens is one of the games I'm looking forward to. The Ravens aren't at full health. They're missing a lot of key guys that make their offense turn. Buffalo, though, has their guys. This should be, I mean, barring any injuries in the next couple of weeks, should be a healthy Buffalo team that should have a good chance at staying competitive against the Chiefs. I just like to see those storylines. Back it up. Back up that praise. Josh Allen is a good quarterback. He's a great quarterback. I've said that he is the most physically gifted quarterback in the NFL. He's big, runs well, he's got a big arm. The top quarterbacks in this league right now, though, when you look at Mahomes, Rodgers, Brady, they aren't losing. They're faced with adversity. They aren't losing those games. If Josh Allen has that same, they face Cleveland. Let's flip the matchups. Josh Allen faces Cleveland at Orchard Park. I don't think the Bills win that game. I really don't, because I think there is something obviously different when comparing the Chiefs and the Bills. They have those explosive playmakers. They can score on one play. Buffalo, very few times I look at their, and they got really hot at the end of the season last year. Buffalo, very few times I look at and say, you know, this drive, they're going to go down and score. And that they had a lot of chances in that game to really put it out of Pittsburgh's reach. They had arguably the worst fourth down play call I've ever seen, with that lineup under center and then set a receiver in motion, then you throw it back 7 yards and was immediately tackled. I mean, next to that punt, remember in Indianapolis where they had the entire line lined up on one side, and the punter in the center. I mean,
against the Patriots,
that was one of those type of plays where I'm like, what are they doing? And all you needed to beat Pittsburgh was to go up by 14. They were up, I think, 10-0 early. Wasn't enough. I mean, you go up 14-0 or have a 2-score lead late in the game, it's over. Pittsburgh's not going to be able to score twice in a row.
Right.
So that is my matchup. That is my matchup to watch for. I still like Kansas City in that game. This is your chance, though, Buffalo and Josh Allen, to get back into that conversation of, no, we are the Super Bowl contender in the AFC. We are the team to beat in the AFC, and we have the better quarterback. That would be your chance to come out and prove your doubters wrong. When we come back on the shift, we're going to switch back into Royals baseball, talk about that crazy comeback last night, and then going over some really intriguing Week 2 matchups in the NFL. You've been listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. Again, I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. If you stayed up late last night, you got to see one of the better comebacks of the Royals season. They opened up their three-game series against Oakland at Kauffman Stadium, and early on in this one, they trailed 6-0. Looked really flat. Jackson Coar had about as bad of a start as I've seen this season. Command wasn't there. Offense was not doing much off Frankie Montas, the Athletics starter. The team grinded, though, and that's tough to do. You could have thought, in the second inning, they go to Ervin Santana. That is your white flag. Ervin Santana's been, I'm not knocking Ervin Santana, he has been good this season. He's just the team's long reliever. You think in that moment, Jackson Coar goes one plus inning of work. You go to Ervin Santana, it's 6-0 or 5-0, and you go, we got to save our bullpen. He's got to just eat the innings. He's got to wear this a little bit. He's a veteran guy. He knows how to do it. This team, though, and this is a part of that growing process, they continue to battle. And unlike the teams the last couple of seasons, they gave themselves a chance late. And Oakland, that was a big game for them. That was a really big game. They were three games back in the wild card. They need just about every win they can get right now. They're trailing Seattle. They're third place right now in the American League West. They needed that win badly, and they were going to do anything to get it. And when you're playing a team that's under 500, there were just over 10,000 fans in the ballpark last night. Those should be your gimmies if you're a playoff team. You're facing a rookie pitcher who's really struggled since being called up to the major leagues. They did that. They got out to an early lead. They got one of their better starters on the mound. That should be said and done. Took two innings. Now it's Cruz. Let's get out of here. They did Cruz. It's just Kansas City wasn't ready to roll over at that point. And they get it to a point of, I believe, the sixth inning. They really get it close. And credit to the bullpen last night. They had a lot of guys work. And mostly credit to the guys in long relief, because they made it attainable in the end to eventually win that game. You had Ervin Santana come in after Coar. Then you had Joel Piamps come in. Both those guys throw four combined innings, allow only two runs. Then you shut it down in the end with Jake Brents, Domingo Tapia, Josh Stama, Scott Barlow. None of those guys allow a hit, and the Royals hang on for a 10-7 win. However, in that sixth inning, that was the turning point. And we've seen it all year long with this guy in Salvador Perez. He comes up in a big moment. The wheels are starting to turn a little bit. Oakland's bullpen is starting to look like what Kansas City's bullpen looked like in that Baltimore game last week. Last Wednesday, I think it was, a week from today. And Salvador Perez comes up. It is 7-5. He is facing Yusmeiro Petit. And he just leaves a pitch right out over the middle to right now one of the best power hitters we've seen in Kansas City. Here's the audio.
With runners now at second and third,
the tying run in scoring position for Salvi.
Petit deals. Perez swings, drives it deep to left. That's a way back, and that ball is out of here. The Royals have come all the way back from a six-run deficit, and Salvador Perez, blasting his 43rd home run this year, has given the Royals an 8-7 lead.
You can't sneak a piece of cheese by a hungry Salvi.
That was Steve Fisiak on the call of Salvador Perez's go-ahead home run in the sixth inning last night. Salvi finished 2-for-4 in that game with four RBIs, and his crazy season just continues. Truly a remarkable season we are seeing from a catcher in baseball, something we've truly never seen. 43 home runs. He now just needs 6 for the all-time record. Franchise record. So the Royals go up 8-7. The morale in Oakland's dugout can't be too high at the moment. You had a 6-0 lead against a fourth-place team in their division. Well, the Royals turned to Domingo Tapia, and we've given praise to Tapia on the shift here. And it's warranted again. He has been a guy that didn't have too many major league innings in his career when the Royals picked him up off waivers. He's been great, and he's been trusted by Mike Matheny to come in some big situations. He now has a 1.75 ERA. He got a hold his fifth of the season. Had a scoreless inning of work. Then he turned it over to Josh Stamont. Scoreless inning of work. Another hold. His 12th. And Scott Barlow, who did not look good in that ninth inning, walked the first two guys and was in jeopardy of walking another. Larry Carter comes out, who's stepping in for Cal Elder right now. He talks to Barlow and gets a double play ball, get out of it. They win 10-7. Another big moment in that game was more of a heartfelt moment, a really cool moment to see. Kyle Isbell, rookie outfielder who started this season on the opening day roster, was an opening day starter. Got a hit in his very first major league at bat. Well, Kyle Isbell came up a few days ago because Michael A. Taylor is on leave due to family emergency. So Kyle Isbell comes up against Sergio Romo, 8-7 game, a runner on, and collects his first major league home run. Here's the audio of that home run from Kyle Isbell.
Now Isbell, who's had a good game, comes up. He's 2-for-3.
Isbell into the right field corner. Gone for his first big league home run.
Kyle Isbell with his first major league home run gives the Royals a 10-7 lead.
That's the insurance runs the Royals are talking about.
That was Ryan Lefever on the broadcast call for Kyle Isbell's home run, and then Steve Fisiak again on the radio call for that home run. So he gets the knockout punch, if you will, and the Royals win 10-7. A pretty impressive win last night. The game was almost 4 hours long, so don't blame me if you didn't stay up for that one because it was a long baseball game. But positives only from this one, I guess, when you look at it. As they win 10-7, it was Kansas City's 66th win of the season. Before we wrap things up here, we want to go through a little bit of a rundown of our potential matchups to watch NFL Week 2. And I have three on my list right now that I consider to be some ones to watch. And Marker, I'll see if you'll agree with me on these, or ones that maybe you have to watch. Number one right now, I have Raiders at Steelers, mainly because I want to see if the Raiders can follow up. Same thing with Pittsburgh, two teams right now in the AFC that are kind of unknown. Very impressive wins in week one, but I want to see maybe a step up. This is a time for both these teams to step up. What do you think about that first matchup?
Ooh, yeah, that's a sneaky good week two game. Both teams getting out, coming out. Would you say the Steelers upset the Bills in that game week one? Was that an upset?
Oh, yeah, I consider that an upset. Yeah. I had them picked on multiple, like, just multiple outlets. I just thought there was no way Buffalo was going to lose that game at home.
Definitely a surprising game. Raiders obviously upset the Ravens. Yeah, that's a really good sneaky week two game. Good test for the Raiders to see where they're at again. I guess the Chiefs' Super Bowl odds kind of fell a little bit because of the AFC West going undefeated week one. So
interesting.
But yeah, that's a good early game, noon game. Rams and Colts, I just want to see that Rams offense again, man. It looks so beautiful Sunday night. And the Colts defense they allowed four Russell Wilson's touchdowns, which I think that's your bread and butter of this Colts team is your defense, because you got Carson Wentz taking snaps under center. I just feel like that their defense needs to have a better showing against LA. But the one game that I'm really looking forward to, and I don't know if it's going to be NFL's game of the week or Jim Nantz and Tony Romo on CBS, but Cowboys Chargers, that's going to make for a very interesting matchup between those two teams. I think the Cowboys defense not getting a off week once again, taking on the Bucks. Now they got to go up against the Chargers offense that's looking really good. Two defenses that feel like have some question marks on it. Dak Prescott, let's see how he looks like against this Chargers defense. Herbert against the Cowboys defense. That could be a really back and forth type of game. Just another fun one to watch. One of them, man, this one's RIP Falcons, man. They play the Bucks this week. What you gonna do, man, if you're Matt Ryan and that with that offensive line?
I keep wanting to think that Atlanta is better than what they keep showing. I really
want to
believe
that. Because what we're used to, man.
It's really, I still think Matt Ryan's a good quarterback. They got Calvin Ridley. You want to think that maybe, I mean, Atlanta got thumped by a Philly team that I am not high on at all.
Yeah.
Thumped. I will say, though, that Cowboys game, I didn't have it listed for me. I like that one. That's going to be another shootout. I think every Cowboys game this year is going to be a shootout.
Right.
That's a big test also. I think it wins at SoFi Stadium, right? That's Chargers' first chance at a home game, because the Rams played Sunday night, but this is the Chargers' first chance to play at SoFi in front of a big crowd. Now, we'll see what type of crowd that is. The other one I have on my list here is Titans at Seahawks. The Titans really need this one.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bad showing on Sunday against Arizona. So you get another NFC West opponent, a very good division. You're facing Russell Wilson. You need this. You need to show that you are still a team in this AFC that can be a playoff team. And I'm not so sure they can do it. This could be another blowout, I'm going to be honest.
Well, you know, it's kind of the same thing with the Colts. They really need that one too, like the Titans. Those two teams, man, can't afford to start 0-2. It's a long season though, as always, but
very long.
Man, if you're considered a playoff team, you got to at least compete with these other teams who are going to be in there with you also when the time comes in January.
That's what I want. Like, I just think when I look at these, because I'm like, you need, it's early, but you got to show that you can beat these teams, because who are you going to play if you make the playoffs? I mean, those are two NFC teams, but those teams are not as good as some of the teams you'll face in the AFC. So that's another one. Titans at Seahawks, I'm excited for. Last one I have on my list is Bills at Dolphins. I think the Dolphins looked okay against New England. This is also a statement game for Buffalo. They need to come out and not only beat Miami, they need to throttle Miami. They need to show that they are still the team in the AFC East, and Miami's not even going to threaten that. So that was the third one. Do you agree with that one? What are you looking forward to in that game?
Another defensive test for the Bills. If the Dolphins manage to steal this one away from them, that's a great start for Miami, getting two divisional wins right off the bat. To start off the season against the other top two teams in that division.
All right, and before we finish up today on the shift, we want to get to our favorite segment of Fact or Fiction. We'll have to hurry up here. Five questions, five takes under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away as fast as you can.
Fact or Fiction, Chiefs add John Brown this season?
We talked about this. I would like to see him come on because that is a good wide receiver option for Kansas City. So I'm going to go fact on that one. I think that as the weeks go on, depending how this offense looks, they may give him a look. You know, just come into this offense and really give himself a shot to flourish in another playoff team. He was with Buffalo. I think he thrived pretty well in Kansas City. So I'm going to go fact that John Brown will be a Chief this season.
Was it a 1,000-yard receiver 2 years ago in Buffalo? Fact or fiction, number 11, Florida, upsets number 1, Alabama.
Never, ever, ever bet against Alabama. I'm still not going to do that. That is going to be fiction. I hope it's close because I want to see a good game, but I don't. It's like, Alabama's just too good. I would never bet against Alabama. I'm going to say it's fiction. Florida will not upset Alabama this weekend.
It's like prop betting against Tom Brady. Fact or fiction, Jackson Kowar makes another start this season.
I mean, what do they got to lose? He has looked not that good his last two starts. He was really bad last night, but there's no need to let him finish out the season. See if you can't finish on a high note. I think Jackson Kowar will make at least another start or two before the season concludes.
Fact or fiction, Buffalo Bills start this season 0-2.
I think they're going to have a bounce-back game against Miami. It will be a tough defense for them, and Buffalo's offense was not great in week one. But you know what? I think I'm going to go fiction. I think the Bills will even up, go 1-1 right now. I think this will be a good statement game for them. They'll be ready. Miami's a divisional opponent, so it will be tougher, but I think Buffalo's good enough to get that win this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun game to watch, another noon game to look forward to. And finally, fact or fiction, the Royals move downtown when their lease ends at Kauffman Stadium.
So that was the thing we actually didn't get to today, but it was a big talking point yesterday when the news broke about J.J. Piccolo. I'm going to go fact. I think the Royals eventually will move downtown. I don't know exactly what year that will be. That just seems like it's always been in the plans. They want to get downtown. Yes, it will take away the tailgating aspect, but the good part is then you got good bar life down there. You know, it's not a ballpark village. You go to the Royals game, maybe after the game or before the game, instead of tailgating, you go out to Power and Light or something like that. Just get that experience of downtown and show the other teams what downtown looks like.
One thing I heard with like people who've gone to Wrigley and everything, scalpers and everything, how cool would it be just be walking downtown and it's like, I got 3 hours to kill. Yeah, I'll pay $20 to go see a Royals game.
And when you leave early, the game's this, there's nowhere to go. You got to go home. Now you get a chance to go somewhere downtown. With that, that will wrap up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Same time tomorrow, 10 a.m. You take it easy, Kansas City.